Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and this week's guest is one of the most delightful people and winner of Drag Race Canada, alongside a successful decade in TV. I've decided it was a decade. I didn't double check, but I was like, we're going to round it up if it's not. And an ever-expanding music empire. Please welcome Priyanka.
Hello, everyone. Wow, what an introduction, am I right? I mean, it's been forever. I'm trying to think about the TV stuff. Like, I'm back on TV again in Canada. I'm like one of the hosts on an entertainment talk show now.
There you go. Because you started in TV.
I'm doing it all.
What, 21?
Yeah, even earlier than that. Like, I was the kid who was like so eager to be on TV that I volunteered at the age of 16. Like, I was like, I'm going to be
a star.
I'm going to be something someday, bitch. So I'm going to go and volunteer at the local TV station. And that's what I did. I loved it.
Was that something that was always there? That kind of ability to like entertain or that yearning to be seen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like as a kid, like I was quite shy, I think, because like I was nervous that like people would say that I'm weird or different or like anything like that, which I feel like it's a very normal thing. Stories of entertainers who are like, they were like shy growing up and now they're big stars. Or they were like, oh, this made sense from the beginning. I always like to be around people. I love to be social. Like I always had like a lot of friends and stuff in school. But I don't know, I was always like too shy to like dance on the dance floor. Or, like too shy to give like speeches at like birthday parties or weddings or stuff. I don't know, something came over me in high school. I saw my first like Destiny's Child concert. That's when I was like, I'm going to do this. That's what I wanted.
I love that. I actually got to interview Michelle, 2 years ago now? And she's a whole experience. She was sat there in her pajamas, bouncing up and down. She had so much energy.
I love her.
She's so cool. You know, it's interesting because I think we so commonly can fall into this trap of thinking that somebody's like public or on stage persona is them 24/7. And, you know, right. I interview enough people to know, in fact, it's usually the opposite, that a lot of the kind of boldest performers are actually the ones that step into that. And there's so much kind of thought and purpose behind their persona. And so for me, it makes a lot of sense that you were maybe the kid kind of taking in what's around you and taking a step back sometimes. And then when it was your time to shine, you're like, okay, well, I've seen how to do this. I know how to step in and step out of it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, especially when you grew, like I went to television school, so it was like when you interview, like I didn't start wanting to be the star. I started wanting to interview a star. There was a lot of like lessons of like when to turn off your personality, when to turn it on, to like give the interview subject like their time to shine. Like that was also an interesting thing. In the last, like basically like when I came out of the closet when I was like 24, I think, I was on Drag Race when I was 26 or 27. So like I came out, had a year of partying, fell in love with drag queens, became a drag queen, got named Toronto's best number one performer, went on to do Drag Race, won Drag Race, and became a pop star all in like 3-4 years. So I had to find myself very quickly. But it was one of those things where like I was finally where I needed to be. Like there wasn't a lot of like my persona is like not really a persona. I feel like it's like a...
like a heightened version.
I truly
version.
Am this person. Yeah, I truly am this person. Like, yes, when you're performing, you're more on and you know, you're more in the groove and stuff. But, like, I really feel like people get to really see a really authentic side of me. Because I'm not, like, your typical queen where I have such a strong, like, shady demeanor. Like, I definitely have my moments of where I say all those kind of things. But it's not, like, a full form, full persona. I feel like who I am today is who the person that filmed Drag Race was, like same person.
Yeah, and I think you can see that coming through with your background in presenting children's TV. I think some of that comes through in the ability to be a kind of host for everyone. And that is quite a distinct skill that doesn't necessarily automatically lend itself to what people learn in drag. Because so often, if you're coming up in a more common kind of conventional way through the club scene, then it is, oh, you're expected to be leaning into dirty jokes and, you know, shoutiness or certain things to hold specifically a drunk audience's attention.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I was, when I got into the drag scene, I was always so confused as to why drag queens are so mean. I was like, how is this funny? Like, how is this like shady, reading each other shit funny? Like I always found it super offensive. Like nowadays I'm fine, But at first I was like, they're so mean. Like, why? Why are they mean to each other? But now I get it. Sometimes it's fun. But I think that, like, every mean-spirited comment comes from a truthful place. Like, it comes from a place of jealousy. Like, when those queens are all rereading each other, I'm like, this has to be coming from somewhere. Like, no one says something mean and calls and says it's a joke and not mean it. Like, if you're a star, you're a star. You're going to hold the audience with, like, your star power, you know? Like, unless your top-line goal is to be a stand-up comedian, like, then sure. But if you're, like, a performer, like, I was really bad at talking on the mic, but people still were like, you know what, this person has some, like, you know, but calling somebody in the audience a cunt, like, how does that make you a star?
Well, I agree with you there. And tell me this then, as we circle back to dating, what's it been like in terms of figuring out yourself and your sexuality, who you might be in relationships whilst living so publicly? Because on one hand, you've got a lot of space in the career that you've had to be yourself, but then also you do have that scrutiny and those eyes on you.
Right. I mean, I think that, like, dating for me, I mean, from the time that I was, like, I came out of the closet and discovered Grindr, I was looking for love, you know? Like, I was, like, always wanting and yearning for that, like, kind of love where they would, you know, I'd watch, like, rom-coms and be like, I want that so bad. When I was on, it was tough because, like, nothing would work out. Like, it was always, like, I would always, like, date these people and, like, I'd either get ghosted or I wouldn't like them. No, the most confusing ones were when you hit it off on your first two or three dates and you were like, holy shit, this person, I cannot believe, like, they're perfect. And then by date three, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Mm-hmm.
I hate this person. Like, that was always very confusing to me.
When you look back on those experiences of the dates seeming to go so well and then there being that kind of twist, do you think there was an element of that in you that you were kind of really looking for the fairy tale and then maybe missing some of the red flags?
I think that 100%. I think whenever, if you are a serial dater and you want to date someone and you want to be with somebody, it is almost 96% of the time that you are trying to give that person the chance to be in love with them. Like, there have been guys who have said shit, dates that I would still like, that nowadays I'd be like, irks, bye. But back then I was like entertaining it because, like, you hope that people are going to turn into somebody that you are going to love. Because also, we've heard stories of, like, people being like, oh, the first time I met him, I hated him. Or, you know, it took us, we were friends at first, and now we're together. And now I couldn't imagine being with anybody else. We hear these stories, and we're like, well, maybe that's my story, too. Like, maybe my story is going to be that, like, I hated him at first, and...
No, I think you're really right. That is such a common thing that we hear. And then the temptation is to round up on people in order to make that situation happen. When in fact, you know, I think those people are being honest that sometimes the person does come into your life and surprise you. And maybe they're not who you expected. Or maybe...
You never know.
Yeah. Well, also, like, I don't know about you, but I look back on my younger self and I didn't know what I wanted. I think I'm only just beginning to figure out what I actually want in a relationship.
And the cool thing about dating too, and we'll get there, is that, like, everything that you want always changes, like, all the time. And people can be your, like, you're just for now, or they can be your forever, but, like, it takes a lot of fucking work to work together to build something. Let me tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get there. I would say, like, when I was on Kids TV, I was younger, I was fresher, I had a more, like, I just was, like, more, like, zappy and more, like, like, I was more for, like, I just wanted to date so bad. So I think that, like, also drove a lot of guys away. You know, like, stage five clear, I see, you know. But when I was on Canada's Drag Race, there was, oh, actually, let me talk about this. Mm-hmm. There was, like, a bit of a lull where I was, like, doing drag a lot. And a lot of the guys that I was, you know, meeting were, I'm performing at Cruz and Tango's, like, the local drag bar, like, come watch. And then come and watch, and they'd be like making it with somebody else in the audience and shit. It's crazy.
Well, you're on stage in front of you.
While I'm on stage performing Ariana Grande, like, what the
maybe
hell?
That's why some drag queens are mean.
I mean, it's a lot of drag queens either already are in relationships and it's kind of like an anomaly where you're like, how? Or there's also the other side of drag where a lot of them are just getting drunk and, like, looking for the hookup. And it's tough because, like, a lot of if you're dating men, because I'm speaking from my experience, a lot of the men that I've dated or have seen interest in, like, they have to be very confident in themselves to be able to date someone with a persona that is drag.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about them. It's about supporting that person that's a drag entertainer. I had a guy once tell me that, like, ever since you started drag, I've become unattracted to you.
Oh, wow.
So.
And what was that? Did you ever get any clarification?
I mean, we talked about it. I was shattered. I mean, it really brought, like, a lot of insecurity, to me in my day-to-day life. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think I was, you know. It was hard because, like, I was also, like, younger and a lot less confident. And it did something to me for sure. Now I'm fine. But at the time, I was like, oh, I'm disgusting. I'm ugly. It takes a one person to say something really upsetting to you like that, like, to give you insecurities for your whole life and body dysmorphia, and you're not good enough. And I'm already a person of color. Like, already it's hard out here, you know? So that really fucked with me.
Yeah. No, I get that. Well, when you can have that vulnerability where your art is a big part of who you are and your personality and your career, it's so tied in. And then, yeah. You know, understandably, we all have those insecurities. And every so often, somebody comes along and they say the right thing that gets us in that particular place. And it can really shake you. I was listening to the interview you did on Nicole Byer's podcast, Why Won't You Date Me? And you were talking about how you gained confidence in different areas of your life. And it really got me thinking about how it can be very compartmentalized at some times, that you could be like super confident hosting a TV show. That's your job. You know what you are. You know what side of yourself to put forward. But that doesn't necessarily mean that same confidence then carries over into the dating scene when you've, you know, only recently kind of come out and was there that feeling of needing to play catch up at any point?
Yeah, totally. I mean, also, like, we're just so conditioned to think that, like, hot and desirable is one thing. And it definitely took me a while to build my confidence and to, like, trust myself and know that I'm worthy enough. I mean, it's a thing that takes a lot of you have to, like RuPaul is right. Like, you got to love yourself. It sounds cheesy, but, like, it takes a lot of work to love yourself. And to accept, like, I think about the things that I hated about myself when I was younger. Like, well, I want to be like a man, right? I want, like, thicker legs, bigger hands, like, blah, 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 blah. And it's crazy having gone through those insecurities, because now as a drag performer, like, I love those things about myself. I love my little long skinny chicken legs. Like, I love my arms, like, and, you know, all that stuff. And like, that took work to get there, to, like, love those things about myself. And it's so easy to hide behind the mask. Like, it's so easy to hide behind a drag persona or a kid's TV personality and just kind of be that character in that space. But it's a very sad clown energy. It's like they always say, like, comedians are the most saddest people out there. It's like you output so much and don't get a lot back in terms of how you feel about yourself and that truest form of love. You get cheers, you get, you know, followers, you get fans, you get tickets are bought to see you, people buy your merch. Like, there's those things that you get from it. But, like, what does it mean to be actually loved by somebody or by you know, your family or that truest form of acceptance of, like, we love you for you no matter what form you come in? That's hard to come by.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it can create a very kind of conditional feeling of worth sometimes there, where you're like, oh, I have self-worth, I've built up confidence in this area, but it's dependent on me being the life and soul of the party, of being the funniest person in the room, of being on the stage, and actually, like, me on a bad day where I just want to stay in bed and I'm exhausted from tour or whatever else.
Yeah.
Who's going to love that person?
Yeah, exactly, because that's also a hard person to love. Like, I mean, to love an entertainer who's outputting so much energy into their art. They don't go to birthday parties. They don't go to baby showers. They don't go to these things. And there's a lot of, like my truest form of relaxation is this, like, sitting on my couch and, like, doing nothing. Zero Netflix, binge eating, nothing. Maybe even, like, some emails here and there because, like, whatever, they're mindless. But for some people, like, regular life is, like, working Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and then going to do things on the weekend. But to be with somebody who's like, I don't want to go out. Like, I need to, like, you know, I'm my social battery's drained. And it's confusing to, like, a partner or to a family member because they're like, but you're so social in your job. Like, you're on tour, you're around bands. You're, like, life of the party. you know, but it's a tough thing for, like, you know, because someone that's going to, like, love an entertainer, they see your dark side. It's tough. I mean, it's very tough. Yeah. I don't know how my boyfriend does it, to be honest with you. Like, it's a lot of, like, but when you meet somebody, you're, like, on the journey together. You have the goal of being together, so you're going to make it work.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's what I'm looking for, is someone that's going to, we're going to get into this thing that we both care about, which is a relationship, and we're going to work totally on it, and we're going to have fun times, but we're also going to work through things.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of work.
Two adults.
I think the majority of the people who are looking for love and want love don't actually realize how hard being in a relationship is. I'm not saying that, like, oh, it's so hard, you won't be able to do it, or, like, to discourage people. It's more just, like, I was surprised of how much work it is to, like, upkeep a relationship. When you're used to being so single, doing your own thing all the time, when someone's like, how are you feeling? You have to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
Or else you're a ginormous bitch. You know? What are you talking about? So, it's very interesting. I love it, though. Love is beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, it really is. And you got me thinking earlier when you were talking about RuPaul, there's that element of self-love as well, which is trusting it. You know, when somebody comes along that does really care about you and is ready to love the different sides of you or different parts of your life, is then actually believing, oh, this is real. This is genuine, because I've been scorned before. I've trusted it when it hasn't been real.
Yeah, I mean, trauma is the realest thing in the world. I mean, there are still some things that I still have trauma about, you know, like, or also just like the anxiety that people get in relationships too. It's like all that's from like fear of the future and then also like built up trauma, because like you can't control if someone's going to hurt you. I remember when my ex, who I wrote Come Through about, he like broke up with me and stuff. And then we had like this kind of like chat, like a very like civil chat. And he was like, so how do you feel? And I was like, like, you know, I'm just annoyed because, like, now I have to process this trauma.
You're like, I had other things to do today.
Yeah, like, now for the next person I date, like, now I'm going to be so worried that they're going to leave me because of this. Like, what a waste of my time.
Yeah, but then that's part of the growth, isn't it? Is that, you know, owning, like, our reaction to a thing, right? That, like, they can behave badly, but then also, like, at what point do we have to kind of work through the baggage ourselves? Otherwise, we're just dumping it on the new person.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, like, it also, your trauma is never for your new person to carry, but it is for them to know that it exists and to understand it, so that if your eyes do glaze over and you become a monster, they know where it's coming from.
Yeah. And was this the same ex that dumped you by FaceTime?
Yeah, it was on FaceTime. That's crazy. I remember, like, that was what a crazy time that was. Like, right when I won Canada's Drag Race. Like, that's cool. Like, my life was a whirlwind, you know? And I just, I can remember, like, how it felt in my room. Like, what everything, like, I lived in a different place. And it's so funny how, like, when you think about a breakup, how you can remember it so clearly. Like, what the room smelled like, what, like, where your phone was, what you were wearing, like, how it felt in the moment. It's so interesting how traumatizing breakups are. And it's funny because, like, I'm so happy that the breakup happened.
Mm-hmm.
He was garbage. Like, he's treating me like shit. But I'm sure he's a great guy. I mean, I don't know. Like, two people sometimes just don't match. But it's so crazy to me how breakups in a relationship are such a ginormous part of people's lives. I mean, breakups make the best pop songs, right? So, like, all these stars talk about breakups. The movie, my boyfriend and I watched so many Netflix movies over Christmas. Every single one of them was about a breakup and being cheated on out of nowhere. Like, it would be a fucking story about nothing, and then all of a sudden someone gets cheated on. I'm like, what? How did we get here?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Yeah, there is such a fascination in cheating specifically. And I think part of it is that kind of like threat detection that we all want the control of, feeling like we would know if we were being cheated on. It's almost like we want to research it, but you don't necessarily.
Yeah. It's like trauma porn. We just want to see it to know that we'll know what it's like.
Yeah.
And you can't control.
The reality is nothing can prepare you.
Even if someone cheats on you, it is actually not the most devastating thing to happen. It's not. Like, my true belief is, if my boyfriend was to cheat on me today, I would be like, thank you. Thank you for doing this now versus when we have kids and we're married and there's fucking no, you know. Like, thank you for this now because I'll take it. Like, peace out. And this is fine. Like, yeah, sure, you're going to have trauma in the next relationship and stuff and whatever. But even if you didn't get cheated on, you're still worried you're going to get cheated on. So what? What else is new? You know?
Oh, no, so, I do. I really respect that response to it, to be honest. That, yeah, it shows you something. And then you're like, okay, well, now I know you better. Now I can factor this in.
Like, I will never, if someone was to break up with me, I would never fight for them. If someone looked me dead in the eye and said, I want to break up with you, I'd be like, great.
Yeah, because I have this theory on it of like, it's not that it can never work if you get back together. But I really believe that once you've had the first breakup, that is the hardest one to take action on, i.e. breaking up with somebody is the hardest the first time round. And therefore, that's going to be something in the back of my mind, you know?
Totally. I mean, if someone is willing to make the decision to end a relationship with you, like they've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah.
And someone has insecurities or they think that like, you know, they're not the ones... If someone's willing to get there and not loop you in at any point along in the conversation, like, you're not going to get that kind of communication out of that person ever. They're going to blindside you about so many things, you know?
Yeah, and I think specifically around cheating, part of what intrigues me about it is, you know, everybody has their different perspectives. So what counts as cheating can vary relationship to relationship, person to person. It's very common that two people in a relationship don't have the same idea of what cheating is, and yet it's right. So often not discussed that I've seen it time and time again that it's not until something happens which one person thinks is crossing a line and the other one doesn't that 100%. Only then is it talked about, and maybe then it's too late.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, the first year that my partner and I were dating, we had a lot of those conversations because drag queens kiss on the lips all the time, they tongue each other, they like, it's so unromantic, but there is physical, you know. Like, there's so much physical touching and slapping your ass and hugging for a little too long. And my boyfriend was like, okay, so explain to me what this is. Like, why are you all so touchy with each other? Is it sexual? You know, you have to ask those questions. And I think it's up to, you know, in a relationship to not feel so attacked sometimes. Because, mm-hmm. like, when you know your boyfriend's like, okay, why are these people touching you? I don't get it. It's like...
And I think these are important equivalents because there's so many parallels to that, you know, that just like off the top of my head, you know, if I think of friends of mine that are in, you know, the theatre that do kind of any like other kinds of performance, that sort of tactileness can be a big part of it. You know, like everyone's nervous, so they're a bit more huggy off stage. It kind of helps offset it. Or, you know, when you talked about like your career blowing up and then the breakup following soon after, I see the same thing happen all the time with comedians that I interview. You know, it's,
oh, interesting.
I think not everyone knows how to, or maybe feels ready to see a change in how other people act towards their partner. Maybe all that extra attention or you feeling, you know, unbalanced. I know something you've talked about is like competitiveness and how damaging that can be in a relationship.
It totally can be. It's like, well, you have your career and I'm doing nothing or whatever, but I'm very of the mind of like, you and I can both rule the world in different ways. You just have to go for it and we have to support each other through it, because whenever you're with somebody that has a career like that, like mine, or like an entertainer, is like, it's so consuming. I see so many drag queens, more often than not their boyfriend or their girlfriend or their, you know, partner are in the dressing room slumming it, just suitcases and costumes and all that stuff, and sometimes they love it and sometimes you can tell that it's like, what, how did I even get here?
Mm-hmm.
You know what, like, how do you live for a person in that sense, you know?
Yeah, whereas for me, by contrast, like somebody having a conventional career that I don't have, that's attractive to me. Like, you have to wear a uniform every day, you have to go to an office, that like I've never really had that in a permanent sense. I've never kind of climbed the corporate ladder. And so for me, that's fascinating in a way that like people can't relate to my work.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's so cool. I mean, there is something to say about opposites attract. I mean, opposites definitely do attract to each other, but then it also does take a lot of like learning and digging to like understand like each other's differences. Because if someone's a 9-to-5er mm-hmm. and they're climbing up the corporate ladder, chances are they do not go out during the week. Or chances are like on weekends, it's that thing that I was saying that like, you know, you might have like one Saturday off in the month, but they're like, well, it's baby shower day. Like, we're going to so-and-so's baby shower. You're like, a fucking baby shower on my day off? What in the 9-to-5, what white people suburban lifestyle is this? But there's that, there is it. Like, what is attractive to somebody? It's like, yeah, I want something totally different because it's so cool and it keeps me interested. But then there is also the other side of like, they are such a completely different person than you are, which is great too.
Yeah, definitely. And if we trace back before, you were just so insightful about relationships and in a really happy one. Do you want to tell me a dating story?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, I've so many. I dated so much. I mean, this is not a dating story, but I need to share this story because it just came up the other day. I was at the bar, and so I actually went on a bad date. And I forget what his name was, but like online, we hit it off. And it was so fun and amazing. And finally, we met, and he was nothing of what he looked like in the photos. He
had like full catfish, or like 10 years younger. What was the deal?
I would say like 60% catfish.
Okay.
He was giving the wrong energy in his photo. So I meet up with him. We sit down. He's like, "What are we getting?" And I was like, "I'm not attracted to this."
What, you got one line in, and you're like, actually, no.
I was like, no.
The red flag is that sentence.
There were that. I was like, let's get a shot, and then I'm going to go, because I have to meet a friend or something, you know. And he's like, okay, cool. So we did a shot. I went to the bar. As soon as I walked into the bar, I got like a double vodka soda pineapple. I just chugged it. I got another one, got so drunk. Met this guy on the dance floor. Me and my friend are like, okay, like let's go home now. And then the guy's like, oh, I'm coming too. We're like, okay. So we go to my friend, his name is Duhin. We go to his house first because I had to pick up a bag. And he goes upstairs. I start to get nauseous. I go and I throw up at the side of this guy's apartment building. The guy who's trying to hook up with me comes up behind me and starts like feel me up and tries to like kiss me and stuff.
Well, you're getting sick.
While I'm puking.
Oh my God.
Then I go into the Uber. He comes in the Uber with me. He's like, oh, I can't wait to go home tonight. And then he comes home with me. And I'm so desperate for a man at this point that I'm entertaining the whole thing. Like, I'm not saying no. I'm like, okay, babe, whatever. You know, whatever. So we go to my house. I get out of the Uber and I'm like, I gotta get some in the back. I go to the I run around the back. It's fucking freezing outside. I land at the back of my like building where there's like this like large brown door. I throw up there again. And then I go to the front. I'm like, okay, let's go up now. So we go up to the, like, who? I think I'm being so slick. I'm vomiting everywhere.
Is this your hookup voice? What is this voice?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, baby, like, whatever you need. So we go upstairs to my apartment. And then we go to start to hook up. And then I fall asleep while we're hooking up, okay? Mm-hmm. He falls asleep, too. We're both exhausted. I wake up in the middle of vomiting. I'm like, I ran to my kitchen sink. I throw up. I go lay on the couch because I'm broken, right? Like the hangover has hit. I've thrown up. It's awful. And then as I'm sleeping, he comes into the living room, taps me on my shoulder and is like, come back to bed. I'm like, you have to be kidding me. Like, why are you still in my apartment?
He will not give up. Had you asked him to leave already?
I was like, I think you have to. So there I am, like jerking him off. And I'm like, half asleep, like I wanted to cry. It was awful. That was my story.
Bless you. I mean, if you'd cried on the dick, I don't think it would have put him off. He was, he'd clearly decided what was happening.
No, which is like, he was like, and it was hot too and stuff. So I was like, I was into it. Like, he didn't take advantage. He was just like very forward. And I was like, I don't know about this. But I was like,
yeah, I never kind of trust the urgency where I'm just like, let's circle back.
No, but it's also like, it's like a self-worth thing on me too. Like if I was 100% confident like I am now, I would be like, get out. It's not happening, but back then it's like, you're like, what if this is the guy? You know, it's like all these like what ifs that a lot of single people go through, which is not right.
Mm-hmm. I have a story for you if you want one. I don't think I've talked about this.
Yes, please. I would love to.
I've only ever once kicked somebody out, and it was, I think we'd gone on a few dates and I'd stayed at his, nothing had happened. This time he was staying at mine. I'd already kind of pre-decided of like, oh, if some stuff happens, I'm feeling like comfortable with that. I'm feeling like ready for it. And I was definitely in a phase where like I was kind of looking for a relationship. So I was sort of like taking my time with things. Anyway, cut to, there's definitely a big red flag that I'd overlooked in that he was 28 and had come out the previous year, combined with he was studying philosophy. And nothing, like, wonderful area of study. I just seem to notice a bit of a trend with people that don't know who they are, love to study philosophy.
Right.
And so that, you're already looking confused. Trust me, this will make sense. That combined with him, like, recently figuring out stuff with his sexuality, I think this is part of what maybe set the scene for what happened. Because essentially, he could get it up, but nothing was happening. No progress was being made towards climax, and we were there for a while, and he started getting aggressive about it because I was losing interest. And I'm just very much of the mentality of like, if it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. Like, let's try again in the morning. Partly because I'm like, well, I don't want to stress you out and then you have more issues. Do you know what I mean? I don't need to associate this experience and then next time it's like, oh, well, what if that happens again, you know? And so for me, I'm just like very happy to like take the pressure off and be like, no, it's cool. Like, I'm happy. Let's cuddle. Let's go to sleep, whatever. But no, he was kind of verbally aggressive and was like calling me lazy and being like, oh, we're having such a good time, blah, blah, blah. And then like, anyway, then was lying in the bed next to me, still trying to get himself there. And at this point, like, I'm ready to go to sleep. I'm like, I've lost interest in this. I'm not liking his tone. And you know when it switches where someone's attractive to you and then suddenly they're not? And it was that switch where he's like next to me, still trying to get there. And I'm just like, no part of this is hot to me. And I like excuse myself to the bathroom. And I think I like just snuck out my clothes with me, got dressed, and then kind of came back in like 5 minutes later and maybe like I'd left the door open. My cat was then in the room with him, which just another reason why things were over.
I'm dead.
And then like just something, you know, when you get that like protective instinct, something about him like stroking my cat, I was like, no, you've been like aggressive with, I didn't feel like unsafe or anything. I just felt kind of shocked and like sort of a bit shaken by the behavior. And then I was like, Milan, get over here. Milan's my cat's name. And then I was just like, I think you need to go. And he was like, oh, what happened? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, we'll talk about it. Just not right now. And it was like midnight or whatever. It wasn't that late. And yeah, he never like gave me the chance to kind of explain what happened, why I'd kicked him out. Because I think for him, he was like, okay, well, that, you know, I really like this guy. This would have been his first like proper boyfriend if it had gone that way. And so for him, he was like, oh shit, well, that's the end of everything. Whereas for me, I was like, we could have a chat about it and then see how that conversation goes. But
yeah,
I think,
because you never know. It could be, he could be like, oh, like, you know, yeah, there's so much.
But I think that says something about my ability to deal with drama, that I was like, no, kicking somebody out, that can happen and we can move on.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
I live for that. I mean, but you also like,
I was proud of myself, like, though.
Yeah,
because I did feel uncomfortable. I didn't feel under threat, but I was like, no, this is not, I'm not comfortable with this. If we go to sleep, I don't know if I'm going to sleep comfortably next to this person. Like, right, I just need to kind of decompress on my own.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's good for you for having those boundaries too, because a lot of people get stuck in those situations like myself, and it's awkward. It's awkward AF.
Yeah. And then 6 months later, he circled back, gave me the chance to explain. And I did, and that was that. And then he was mad at me again because he thought if he circled back in 6 months and gave me the chance to explain, then that would be us in a relationship. And so now you see what I mean about there were some red flags of him not knowing himself or having experience of adult relationships.
It all makes sense. No, it does.
Yeah. Anyway, so as we start to wrap up then, we need to choose our rules of the game. So you're, it sounds like, in a really great relationship now. So do you want to tell me one of the ways you think you're making it work?
I mean, it makes me very uncomfortable, but not that question, but like I'm leading what I'm trying to say. Like, it's that vulnerability that you can have with like your therapist or your best friend like has to be transferred over to your partner in order, and they have to receive it properly in order for a relationship to work. You know, there have been times where like my partner has like asked me questions and I kind of give like a vanilla bean answer because I don't want to get into it. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, no, like you have to like, you know, dig a little bit deeper. And I'm like, oh, deeper.
That would be me. Feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but when we dig deeper and talk about our feelings, we get to a place where we actually start talking properly to each other and start to understand each other and like in love each other more because of it. Cause we're like, oh, like that was a misunderstanding, or, oh, it's good to know that about you. So I would say that is one of my rules of the game. Mm-hmm.
Love it.
What else? If you're single, like I would say a big part of being successfully single is truly like put time into yourself. They say it once, they'll say it again. It always happens when you're not looking for it. And what's attractive is people that focus on themselves and make a life for themselves and don't become codependent. Mm-hmm. Codependency is such an old school way of love. It's such a husband and wife with two kids. It's such a white fence. It's such a great American family, you know?
Priyanka's like, that needs to stay in the history books. Fuck that shit.
It needs to stay out. Stay out. Get out. So I would say that. And then my last thing would have to be, like, if you're not having fun, it's not worth it.
Yes.
Period. If you have to escape to your friends to have fun and you have a partner, you're in the wrong relationship. You shouldn't have to escape to anybody. You should be able to have the same amount of fun with your partner than you are with your best friend.
Oh, I could not agree more. Yeah, points for that. Because whilst you want that variety of people in your life, you don't want to put all of your kind of socializing into one person. Yeah, they shouldn't be draining you. Supposedly, your main person shouldn't be the one that you have to go vent to your friends about just to cope with them. Because I can also very much speak to both sides of that, where I'm going to be the first friend to be like, get out.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm happily single. Yeah, it's exactly. Possible.
Exactly.
And the rule of the game I'm going to add is kind of inspired by that, because I am in a good place. I've worked on a lot of stuff in terms of like being a real adult and figuring out a lot of my shit and having that mm-hmm. kind of genuine, like, happy independence. And now I'm very protective of my zen. I had a great day today. I had a great time talking to you. And I don't have anyone here that's going to stress me out. A lot of my relationships have been pretty stressful. And yeah.
Right.
Don't let them fuck that. With your zen.
Don't fuck with me, bitch.
Yeah, I'm also going to add, given we're doing lists of rules, because I only asked you for one, the other one I would have gone for.
Sorry, I know I tell you. I was like, what is that?
No, it's great. The other one that was my backup thought there was about what we talked about baggage, just owning your shit. Because we all love to do that thing in the dating game of pointing the finger and being like, oh, I could never write a Tinder profile with that description, or, you know, I can't believe they did that on the day. And, you know, we've got to remember that it's not always someone else. We've definitely been somebody's story, and as fucking gut clenching as that is to acknowledge the possibility of, it's better to do it than to keep being that person, surely.
100%. I agree with you. 100% agree.
And on that note, then we will wrap up that. You're so delightful to chat to.
This is so fun. I mean, it flew by. This is so great to talk about love.
There you go. And we'll have a debrief thing in a minute behind the paywall. But for now, you've got some more music coming out. Talking of being a pop star.
I do. I have a new single coming out on April 28th, 1 month today that we're recording this. It's called Bad Bitches Don't Cry, featuring Ralph. She's a Canadian pop singer. It's a really exciting song because everyone's like, bad bitches do cry. And it's causing this conversation, which I'm obsessed with, because I'm like, no, bad bitches definitely cry. Bad bitches have a lot of emotions. But this bad bitch that doesn't cry is about, I had a guidance counselor in school tell me that I'll never be a star. And I didn't let it stop me. Like when I'm talking about crying, I'm talking about no one can take away your happiness from you. No one can tell you that you can't, you know, do something. Like, you can 100% be whatever you want to be as long as you fucking work hard at it. So that's what this bad bitch ain't crying about. So it's going to be amazing. This music video, like, it's all going to come out so soon. It's wild that I'm having music finally. It's been since 2021. I've had new music, so I'm excited.
That is so exciting. I can't wait to hear it. We might have to talk off air about, can I be snuck in a link beforehand? Because, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be great. And look at you living the rule you gave about vulnerability of, like, this is just, you know, linked to a low-key trauma about a teacher that told me I'd never be a star. Because if I'm learning one thing, trauma might be one of your favorite words. What's that actress that won an Oscar recently that everyone was, Michelle? She says trauma funny. Trauma.
Michelle?
No.
Michelle Yeoh?
Jamie Lee Curtis. Because she had some movie that she was like, well, it's all about trauma. Trauma?
Yeah.
That's who I was thinking of when you were like, well, that's there's me. Just a lot of trauma and we've got to work on our trauma. And also this was my trauma. So yeah, might have to get you on my mental health podcast. Plenty of space for trauma conversation there. All right, for now, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damaged by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.